It's that time again. Welcome to the fifth broadcast of Shakespeare Says, a show that sets out to find ways to apply the immortal words of William Shakespeare to the questions, problems, issues, and situations of life here in the 21st century. We are certainly finding that he has something to say about pretty much everything, and as we have progressed through these broadcasts, we are increasingly convinced that this playwright has fully earned the accolade Soul of an Age. And not just his age, but all ages. The show this time is called More Than Kin and Less Than Kind, with thanks to that melancholy Dane, Prince Hamlet, and revolves around the theme of family relationships and problems. Fathers, brothers, uncles, nieces, daughters, even in one case extended family members, functional and dysfunctional. Now in today's world, we would send the folks we are about to meet with a good family counselor. But hey, why spend all that money when Will is right here for the asking? Family relationships. That's the framework for this show. So let's dive right in and you'll find that the water's just fine. As we did in our last broadcast, we have chosen to begin with the popular comedy As You Like It. In the play, a very decent and thoroughly engaging young man has been cheated out of his birthright and his inheritance by his greedy brother. Reduced to poverty, he has only recently begun to show an inclination to fight back. Our first scene allows us to meet that greedy brother, his name is Oliver, plotting with a professional wrestler and breaker of bones, Charles, to become his personal hitman, to harm, possibly even kill, the younger brother. Now, in most families, brothers just don't behave this way. But Oliver has already moved far beyond harmless sibling rivalry. Let's listen in.
Good morrow to your worship.
Good Monsieur Charles. What's the new news in the new court?
There's no news at the court, sir, but the old news. That is, the old duke is banished by his younger brother, the new duke, and three or four loving lords have put themselves into voluntary exile with him, whose lands and revenues enrich the new duke. Therefore, he gives them good leave to wander.
Can you tell if Rosalind, the duke's daughter, be banished with her father?
Oh, no, for the duke's daughter, her cousin, so loves her, being ever from their cradles bred together, that she would have followed her exile or have died to stay behind her. She is at the court, and no less beloved of her uncle than his own daughter, and never two ladies loved as they do.
Where will the old duke live?
They say he is already in the forest of Arden, and many merry men with him. And there they live, like the old Robin Hood of England. They say many young gentlemen flock to him every day, and fleet the time carelessly as they did in the golden world.
Charles, you wrestle tomorrow before the new duke.
Marry do I, sir. And I came to acquaint you with a matter. I am given, sir, secretly, to understand that your younger brother Orlando hath a disposition to come in disguised against me, to try a fall. Tomorrow, sir, I wrestle for my credit, and he that escapes me without some broken limb shall acquit him well. Your brother is but young and tender, and for your love I would be loath to foil him, as I must for my own honor, if he comes in. Therefore, out of my love to you, I came hither to acquaint you withal, that either you might stay him from his intendment, or brook such disgrace well as he shall run into, in that it is a thing of his own search, and altogether against my will.
Charles, I thank thee for thy love to me, which thou shalt find I will most kindly requite. I had myself noticed my brother's purpose herein, and have by underhanded means labored to dissuade him from it. But he is resolute. I'll tell thee, Charles, it is the stubbornest young fellow of France, full of ambition. an envious emulator of every man's good parts, a secret and villainous contriver against me, his natural brother. Therefore, use thy discretion. I had as lief thou dost break his neck as his finger, and thou wert best look to it. For thou dost him any slight disgrace, or if he do not mightily grace himself on thee, he will practice against thee by poison, and trap thee by some treacherous device, and never leave thee till he hath taken thy life by some indirect means or other. For I assure thee, and almost with tears as I speak it, there is not one so young and so villainous this day living. I speak but brotherly of him, but should I anatomize him to thee as he is, I must blush and weep, and thou must look pale and wonder.
I am heartily glad I came hither to you. If he come tomorrow, I'll give him his payment. If ever he go alone again, I'll never wrestle for prize more. And so, God keep your worship.
Farewell, good Charles. Now, will I stir this gamester? I hope I should see an end of him, for my soul, yet I know not why, hates nothing more than he. Yet he is gentle, never schooled, and yet learned, full of noble device, of all sorts enchantingly beloved, and indeed so much in the heart of the world, and especially of my own people, who best know him, that I am altogether misprized. But it should not be so long. This wrestler shall clear all. Nothing remains but that I kindle the boy thither, which now I go about.
That was Brandon Bunn as Oliver, and Sam Borders as the mighty Charles. What Oliver is doing is pretty ugly, but this is a comedy, so you'll be relieved to learn that by the end of the play, Shakespeare allows Oliver to not only repent, but to reconcile with his brother. He even gets one of the girls. Our second scene takes us into the dark and duplicitous world of Richard III. Once again, the consummate chess master, Richard, played here by Jeff Schilling, as always on the lookout for his own advancement, makes a brazen proposal to a stunned former Queen Elizabeth, Candy Thomas, suggesting that he marry her daughter, his own niece, and that she, the former queen, broker the incestuous deal for him. This to a woman who knows full well that he has murdered half her family. Nothing like incest and murder to add to the festivities at a family reunion. But let's remember, this is Richard, and we have already learned what a seductive charmer he can be and how he will shamelessly stop at nothing to achieve his ends. But without giving too much away, I need to say that this Queen Elizabeth may not prove as easy a mark as the unfortunate Queen Anne, who Richard had done away with earlier.
Stay, madam. I must talk a word with you.
I have no more sons of the royal blood for thee to slaughter. For my daughters, Richard, they shall be praying nuns, not weeping queens, and therefore level not to hit their lives.
You have a daughter called Elizabeth, virtuous and fair, royal and gracious.
And must she die for this? Oh, let her live, and I'll corrupt her manners, stain her beauty, slander myself as false to Edward's bed, throw over her the veil of infamy, so she may live unscarred of bleeding slaughter. I will confess she was not Edward's daughter.
Wrong not her birth. She is a royal princess.
To save her life, I'll say she is not so.
Her life is safest only in her birth.
And only in that safety died her brothers.
Lo, at their births good stars were opposite.
No, to their lives ill friends were contrary.
All unavoided is the doom of destiny.
True, when avoided grace makes destiny. My babes were destined to a fairer death if grace had blessed thee with a fairer life.
You speak as if I had slain my cousins.
Cousins indeed, and by their uncle cousined, of comfort, kingdom, kindred, freedom, life.
Madam, I intend more good to you and yours than ever you or yours by me were harmed.
What good is covered with the face of heaven to be discovered than can do me good?
The advancement of your children, gentle lady.
Up to some scaffold, there to lose their heads.
Unto the dignity and height of fortune, the high imperial type of this earth's glory.
Tell me, what state, what dignity, what honor canst thou demise to any child of mine?
Even all I have, I and myself and all, will I withal endow a child of thine? Know that from my soul I love thy daughter.
That thou dost love my daughter from thy soul. So from thy soul's love didst thou love her brothers.
Be not so hasty to confound my meaning. I mean that with my soul I love thy daughter, and do intend to make her Queen of England.
Well then, who dost thou mean shall be her king?
Even he that makes her queen. Who should be else?
What, thou?
Even so. How think you of it?
How canst thou woo her?
That would I learn of you, as being best acquainted with her humor.
And wilt thou learn of me?
Madam, with all my heart.
Send to her, by the man that slew her brothers, a pair of bleeding hearts. Thereon engrave Edward and York, then haply she will weep. Therefore present to her, as sometimes Margaret did to thy father, steeped in Rutland's blood, a handkerchief, which, say to her, did drain the purple sap from her sweet brother's body, and bid her wipe her weeping eyes withal.
You mock me, madam. This is not the way to win your daughter.
Is no other way, unless thou couldst put on some other shape and not be the Richard that hath done all this.
Look, what is done cannot be now amended. Men shall deal unadvisedly sometimes, which after hours gives leisure to repent. Again shall you be mother to a king, and all the ruins of distressful times repaired with double riches of content. Go, madam, to thy daughter go. Prepare her ears to hear a wooer's tale.
What were I best to say? Her father's brother would be her lord? Or shall I say her uncle? Or he that slew her brothers and her uncles? Under what title shall I woo for thee, that God, the law, my honor, and her love can make seem pleasing to her tender years?
Say I will love her everlastingly.
But how long shall that title ever last?
Sweetly in force until her fair life's end.
But how long fairly shall her sweet life last?
As long as heaven and nature lengthens it.
As long as hell and Richard likes of it.
Therefore, dear mother, I must call you so, be the attorney of my love to her. Plead what I will be, not what I have been. Not my deserts, but what I will deserve.
Shall I be tempted of the devil thus?
Aye. If the devil tempt you to do good.
Yet thou didst kill my children.
But in your daughter's womb, I bury them.
I go. Write to me very shortly, and you shall understand from me her mind.
Bear her my true love's kiss. And so, farewell.
She's gone. Relenting fool and shallow, changing woman.
Thank you. Now, if a psychopath and a sociopath can inhabit one body, I believe we may have just found proof of it. Well, since we're here on the dark side, let's tarry just a little longer. In our fourth show, we met the great warrior Othello, overwhelmed by a passionate jealousy stirred up by his supposed strongest supporter, Iago. Sad to say, Iago's machinations work, and in our next scene, we find Othello, having been completely duped by the evil Iago, preparing to murder, he wants to call it a sacrifice to the justice of her alleged betrayal, but to murder his young wife. John Lina is Othello, and Sharon Becker is the unfortunate Desdemona.
It is the cause. It is the cause, my soul. Let me not name it to you, you chaste stars. It is the cause. Yet I'll not shed her blood, nor scar that whiter skin of hers than snow and smooth as monumental alabaster. And yet she must die, else she'll betray more men. Put out the light, and then put out the light. If I quench thee, thou flaming minister, I can again thy former light restore, should I repent me. But once put out thy light, thou cunning pattern of excelling nature, I know not where is the Promethean heat that can thy light relume. When I have plucked the rose, I cannot give it vital growth again. It needs must wither. I must weep, but they are cruel tears. This sorrow's heavenly. It strikes where it doth love. She wakes.
Who's there? Othello.
I, Desdemona.
Will you come to bed, my love?
Have you prayed tonight, Desdemona?
I, my lord.
If you bethink yourself of any crime unreconciled as yet to heaven and grace, solicit for it straight.
Alack, my lord. What may you mean by that?
Well, do it and be brief. I will walk by. I would not kill thy unprepared spirit. No, heavens forfend, I would not kill thy soul.
Talk you of killing?
Aye, I do.
Then heaven have mercy on me.
Amen, with all my heart.
If you say so, I hope you will not kill me. And yet, I fear you. For you're fatal then when your eyes roll so. Why I should fear, I know not, since guiltiness I know not. But yet, I feel I fear.
Think on thy sins.
They are loves I bear to you.
Aye, and for that thou diest.
The death's unnatural that kills for loving. Alas, why gnaw you so your nether lip? Some bloody passion shakes her very frame. They are portents, but yet I hope. They do not point on me.
Peace, and be still.
I will so. What's the matter?
That handkerchief, which I so loved and gave thee, thou gavest to Cassio.
No, by my life and soul. Send for the man and ask him.
Sweet soul, take heed. Take heed of perjury. Thou art on thy deathbed.
Aye, but not yet to die.
Presently. Therefore confess thee freely of thy sin. For to deny each article with oath cannot remove nor choke the strong conception that I groan withal. Thou art to die.
Then, Lord, have mercy on me.
I say amen.
And have you mercy too. I never did offend you in my life. Never loved Cassio, but with such general warranty of heaven as I might love. I never gave him token.
By heaven, I saw my handkerchief in his hand. O perjured woman, thou dost stone my heart and makest me call what I intend to do a murder, which I thought a sacrifice. I saw the handkerchief.
He found it then. I never gave it to him. Send for him hither. Let him confess the truth.
He hath confessed.
What, my lord?
That he hath used thee.
How? Unlawfully?
Aye.
He will not say so.
No, his mouth is stopped. Honest Iago hath taken order for it.
Oh, my fierce interprets. What? Is he dead?
Had all his hairs been lives, my great revenge had stomach for them all.
Alas, he is betrayed and I undone.
Out, strumpet, weep'st thou for him to my face?
Oh, banish me, my lord, but kill me not.
Down, strumpet.
Kill me tomorrow, but let me live tonight, but half an hour.
Being done, there is no pause.
But while I say one prayer,
it is too late.
Thank you, John and Sharon. I am glad to report that Othello realizes his mistake, but not in time to keep him from following through on the evil influences of both Iago and that green-eyed monster, jealousy. Next, we are especially privileged to bring you a rendition of one of Shakespeare's best sonnets, performed by one of Shelby County Community Theater's real treasures, Iverson Warner. Mr. Warner, a lifelong Shakespeare lover, here gives us his take on Sonnet 73, addressing beloved youth from the vantage point of old age and observation of the passage of Shakespeare's favorite topic, time.
That time of year thou mayest in me behold, when yellow leaves are none, or few do hang upon those boughs which shake against the cold. Bare ruined choirs, where late the sweet birds sang. In me thou seest the twilight of such day that as the sun set fadeth in the west, which by and by black night doth take away, death's final self that seals up all in rest. In me thou seest the glowing of such fire that on the ashes of his youth doth lie, as the deathbed whereon it must expire, consumed with that which it was nourished by. This thou perceiv'st, that thou must love so strong to love that well which thou must leave alone.
Thank you, Iverson, and thank you so much for your many years of artistic giving to our theater. So, quick, Doc, find us a comedy. We need to breathe easier here. And here is just the ticket. In a wild comedy, the irrepressible Falstaff has decided to court two married ladies. A part of his approach, or technique, is to send each a letter. But unbeknownst to him, the ladies not only know each other, but are best friends. Let's listen in as Mistress Ford, played by Erica Wardlow, and Mistress Page, Janet Parsons, compare notes and plot to get revenge on this pompous and ridiculous would-be lover, Sir John Falstaff.
What? Have I escaped love letters in the holiday time of my beauty, and am I now a subject for them? Let me see. Ask me no reason why I love you, for though love use reason for his prescient, he admits him not for his counselor. You are not young, no more am I. Go to them, their sympathy. You are merry, so am I. Ha ha, then there's more sympathy. You love sack, and so do I. Would you desire better sympathy? Let it suffice thee, Mistress Page, at the least, if the love of a soldier can suffice, that I love thee. I will not say pity me, 'tis not a soldier-like phrase, but I say love me by me. Thine own true knight, by day or night, or any kind of light, with all his might, for thee to fight? John Falstaff. What a harrod of jewelry is this, a wicked, wicked world, one that is well-nigh worn to pieces with age to show himself a young gallant. What an unweighed behavior hath this Flemish drunkard picked, with the devil's name out of my conversation that he dares in this manner assay me. Why, he hath not been thrice in my company. What should I say to him? I was then frugal of my mirth. Heaven forgive me. Why, I'll exhibit a bill in the Parliament for the putting down of men. How shall I be revenged on him? For revenged I will be, as sure as his guts are made of puddings.
Mistress Page, trust me, I was going to your house.
And trust me, I was coming to you. You look very ill.
Nay, I'll never believe that. I have to show to the contrary.
Faith, but you do, in my mind.
Well, I do then. Yet I say I could show you to the contrary. Oh, Mistress Page, give me some counsel.
What's the matter, woman?
Oh, woman, if it were not for one trifling respect, I could come to such honor.
Hang the trifle. Woman, take the honor. What is it? Dispense with trifles. What is it?
If I would but go to hell for an eternal moment or so, I could be knighted.
What? Thou liest, Sir Alice Ford. These knights will hack, and so thou shouldst not alter the article of thy gentry.
We burn daylight. Here, read, read. Perceive how I might be knighted. I shall think the worse of fat men as long as I have an eye to make difference of men's liking. And yet he would not swear, praised women's modesty, and gave such orderly and well-behaved reproof to all uncomeliness that I would have sworn his disposition would have gone to the truth of his words. But they do no more adhere and keep place together than the 100 psalms to the tune of Greensleeves. What tempest, I trow, through this whale, with so many tons of oil in his belly, ashore at Windsor. How shall I be revenged on him? I think the best way were to entertain him with hope, till the wicked fire of lust have melted him in his own grease. Did you ever hear the like?
Letter for letter, but that the name of Page and Ford differs. To thy great comfort in this mystery of ill opinions, here's the twin brother of thy letter. But let thine inherit first, for I protest mine never shall. I warrant he hath a thousand of these letters, writ with blank space for different names. Sure, more. And these are of the second edition. He will print them out of doubt, for he cares not what he puts into the press when he would put us to. I had rather be a giantess and lie under Mount Pelion. Well, I will find you 20 lascivious turtles ere one chaste man.
Why, this is the very same. The very hand. The very words. What doth he think of us?
Nay, I know not. It makes me almost ready to wrangle with mine own honesty. I'll entertain myself like one that I am not acquainted withal. For sure, unless he knows some strain in me that I know not myself, he would never have bordered me in this fury.
Boarding, call you it? I'll be sure to keep him above deck.
So will I. If he come under my hatches, I'll never to see again. Let's be revenged on him. Let's appoint him a meeting. Give him a show of comfort in his suit, and lead him on with a fine baited delay, till he hath pawned his horses to mine host of the Garter.
Nay, I will consent to act any villainy against him that may not sully the chariness of our honesty. Oh, that my husband saw this letter. It would give eternal food to his jealousy.
Why, look where he comes, and my good man too. He's as far from jealousy as I am from giving him cause, and that, I hope, is an unmeasurable distance.
You are the happier woman.
Let's consult together against this greasy knight. Come hither.
Did you catch the reference to the song Greensleeves? Our show's theme, huh? Really needed to sneak that in there. We return now to Venice and the unstable world of Othello one more time. In a marriage gone tragically awry, the falsely accused young wife is forced to make the very difficult decision of staying by her troubled husband, standing by her man, or seeking some kind of escape. Her trusted lady-in-waiting is trying to help by distracting her from her purpose to remain with exaggerated tales of marriage, knowing full well that her mistress is in grave danger. Desdemona, played by Sarah Beth Gomelski, is talking with Amelia, Teresa Wentzel, who is preparing for bed as she has been instructed by her husband, Othello. Both women know something is amiss, but both try to pretend otherwise. Here from Othello are Desdemona and Amelia.
What shall I do to win my lord again? For by the sleight of heaven, I know not how I lost him. Here I kneel. If ever my will did trespass against his love, either in discourse of thought or actual deed, or that mine eyes, mine ears, or any sense delighted them in any other form, or that I do not yet, and ever did, and ever will, although he do shake me off, comfort forswear me. Unkindness may do much, and his unkindness may defeat my life, but never taint my love.
How goes it now? Your husband looks gentler than he did.
He says he will return at once, and hath commanded me to go to bed, and bid me to dismiss you.
Dismiss me?
It was his bidding. Therefore, good Amelia, give me my nightly wearing, and adieu. We must not now displease him.
I would you had never seen him.
So would not I. My love doth so approve him, that even his stubbornness, his checks, his frowns, prithee, unpin me. Have grace and favor in them.
I have laid those sheets you bade me on the bed.
All's one. Good faith, how foolish are our minds, if I do die before thee. Prithee, shroud me in one of these same sheets.
Come, come, you talk.
My mother had a maid called Barbary. She was in love, and he she loved proved mad, and did forsake her. She had a song of willow, an old thing, 'twas, but it expressed her fortune, and she died singing it. That song tonight will not go from my mind. I have much to do but to go hang my head all at one side and sing it like poor Barbary. Prithee, dispatch.
Shall I go fetch your nightgown?
No, unpin me here. This Ludovico is a proper man.
Oh, a very handsome man.
He speaks well.
I know a lady in Venice would have walked barefoot to Palestine for a touch of his nether lip.
Sing, willow, willow, willow. Her salt tears fell from her and softened the stones. Sing, willow. Lay by these. Hark, who is that that knocks?
It is the wind.
If I court mo women, you'll couch with mo men. Go, get thee gone. Good night. Mine eyes do itch. Doth that bode weeping?
Oh, 'tis neither here nor there.
I have heard it said so, couch with mo men. Oh, these men, these men. Dost thou unconscious think? Tell me, Amelia, that there be women do abuse their husbands in such gross kind?
There be some such, no question.
Wouldst thou do such a deed for all the world?
Why, would not you?
No, by this heavenly light.
Nor I neither by this heavenly light. I might do it as well in the dark.
Wouldst thou do such a deed for all the world?
The world is a huge thing. It is a great price for a small buys.
Good troth, I think thou wouldst not.
By my troth, I think I should, and undo it when I have done't. Marry, I would not do such a thing for a joint ring, nor for measures of lawn, nor for gowns, petticoats, nor caps, nor any petty exhibition. But for all the whole world, oh, God's pity, who would not make her husband a cuckold to make him a monarch? I should venture purgatory for it.
Beshrew me, if I would do such a wrong for the whole world.
Why? The wrong is but a wrong in the world. And having the world for your labor, 'tis a wrong in your own world, and you might quickly make it right.
I do not think there is any such woman.
Oh, yes, a dozen, and as many to the vantage as would store the world they played for. But I do think it is their husbands' faults if wives do fall. See that they slack their duties and pour our treasures into foreign laps, or else break out in peevish jealousies, throwing restraint upon us. Or, say they strike us, or scant our former having in despite. Why, we have galls, and although we have some grace, yet have we some revenge. Let husbands know their wives have sense like them. They see and smell and have their palates both for sweet and sour, as husbands have. What is it that they do when they change us for others? Is it sport? I think it is. And doth affection breed it? I think it doth. Is it frailty that thus errs? It is so too. And have not we affections, desires for sport and frailty as men have? Then let them use us well, else let them know the ills we do. Their ills instruct us so.
Good night, good night. Guide me such use ascend, not to pick bad from bad, but by bad mend.
Time has done it again, and we need to leave you. But let me add one more important footnote about that old arbitrator, time. It is the most frequently used of all the themes in Shakespeare. That word is used even more often than love, time, from the healing nature of the passage of time, as in The Tempest, to the ravages that old age and time can bring to us all, as expressed so emphatically in sonnets like our friend Iverson Warner shared with us earlier. But right now, at this moment, time is a gentle master, and is simply reminding us that we are through for this episode of Shakespeare Says. But we will be returning soon with more. Speaking for our producer, Reggie Van Stockham, and our whole Shelby County Community Theater family, this is Jack Wan saying, if we do meet again, why, we shall smile. If not, why, then this parting was well made. But not to worry, we'll definitely meet again, because show number 6 is yet to come, and all our resident soothsayers agree that it bodes fair for us all.